dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello everyone and welcome to Maximum Film. It is episode 233 and I'm glad you're here with me and my friend. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, everyone's favorite critic, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
I'll tell you, Iffy, I know this is a basic bitch answer, but I'm really enjoying The Gilded Age on HBO. I was a total Downton Abbey, never missed an episode, and now this is just giving me more of that tasty, you know, like side eye in the salon kind of action that I crave from shows like this. It's about New York City in the late 19th century and the arrival of the new money robber baron types and how the old money, you know, Astors were trying to sort of keep them out of the upper echelon of high society. But, you know, there's like a gajillion characters and there's a gay heir and there's, you know, scheming servants and new in the world of Julian Fellowes is an actual black character with interesting things happening. A young woman who is a writer who's trying to, you know, sell stories to newspapers and, you know, dealing with, they're very interested. And then they meet her and they're like, oh, and then now she's going to be writing for a black newspaper and she lives in Brooklyn with her parents. And, you know, there's assumptions about class and just all kinds of stuff. And I'm here for it.
Ooh, I'm like, let me in.
I very much like to imagine just this crosstown shot of Alonzo and Dave snuggled in watching The Gilded Age and then leaping over to me and my cats watching Reacher. Just the total difference of that. I enjoy.
Ooh, yeah. Well, you know, if you want to know who's watching Reacher, let me introduce you to him. It's the Queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark, holding it down, looking great, super producer extraordinaire, a great programmer. What's good?
Ah, Iffy, I love it. Every week, he's my strongest resume. What is good for me? You guys, I'm super into lox lately. L-O-X, salmon.
Oh, okay.
Super into it. I had like a craving a few weekends ago and I ordered like the bagel with cream cheese and lox from Cantor's and it was approximately $117. And then I was like, you know, if teach a man to lox. And then I just got a whole thing of lox.
Ooh.
And then like the Neufchâtel, which is a sort of French cheese
that tastes
like cream cheese. And rye bread. I like rye bread instead of bagels. Mm. And every morning I'm like, ooh, this feels fancy.
Oh, yeah. Whip it up.
Right?
I used to go to a deli when I was in college, and they had what they called the LEO scramble, and it was lox, eggs, and onions.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Was a big fan of that. And, you know, a little fresh dill on top, and you're in
business. Oh, yeah. Oh, that up.
When you're staying at like a mid-tier hotel that isn't quite, you know, Best Western, you know, continental breakfast, but isn't quite, has its own restaurant, and they have like the continental breakfast, but they throw a little extras, like there is lox and the bagels and the onions. You're like, okay, this is a place I'd like to be.
That's exactly the culinary standard I like to set in my home, which is a mid-range motel.
Yeah, 3.5 stars on Yelp.
Yeah,
exactly.
The breakfast that comes with the room. That's what. That's the energy we put out here at Shea Clark.
Yeah. I'm all about it. We'll keep the ball rolling, but I could talk about lox all day. We're joined by Olivia Peace, director of Tahara. Olivia, what's good?
Yay, Olivia!
Hello. I'm so happy to be here. But let's see what's good. I mean, Valentine's Day just passed, and so me and my girlfriend, we went to Long Beach, and we like had a nice little beach day, and we went to this cool like vegan cafe. It's really sweet.
Ooh, strong beach.
Vegan ladies on the beach. Dream come true, truly.
Yeah. And I got a list of vegan restaurants for you. If you haven't had Burger Lords yet, they're my favorite spot. It used to be vegan and regular meat. And so that was like the spot I would take all my vegan friends because, you know, I get my meat. They get their feet, which is, you know, short for fake meat.
You know, everybody knows that.
Yeah. You know,
are you flesh-splaining vegan restaurants?
flesh-splaining. But yeah, they went full vegan, and probably even now I still go there because it's so good. And you can choose because I'm actually a like vegan burger connoisseur. Like I love, even though I eat meat, I like to find a good vegan burger. If you're in Austin, Arlo's, I love to go there. They have a mac and cheese, a bacon burger that is vegan. That is like, as soon as I land in Austin, I pick it up. But if you're in the Bay, I like Super Burger's vegan burger because it has like a seeded patty. So it's like a nice crunch with hummus on top. And but with Burger Lords, you can choose between their like seeded or meaty patty. So yeah, I'm going to get that list.
The amount of things that we've accidentally tapped into that Iffy has a well opinions, of knowledge on, yes. That you're like, what?
Yeah, I'm telling y'all. See, I'm off the market now, but my thottery keeps me with a whole bunch of different access because I need to, you know, I need to be a Renaissance man. What you want? You want to eat or you want to be eight? You know. Anyway, let's keep the ball rolling.
He's got the type 10, please, Iffy. What is good besides your acumen of vegan restaurants?
Oh Lord.
Oh man, what's good with me is I just got back from the snow. You know, if you're in LA, especially if you're a transplant talking smack about LA because you don't know the city, because you don't like to have intention when you go out to stuff, you know, a lot of New Yorkers like to stumble into things because that's what New York is good for. There's always something going on. You could stumble into an event. With LA, you need an intention. So they come out here and there's like, there's nothing to do. It's like, no, you need to decide what you want to do. That's why you're having trouble. Also, you need a car. In LA, you can surf and snowboard in the same day. And I keep telling people this because it's probably the tightest thing about here. I went up to Lake Arrowhead. You go up there. I was snowboarding. There's yet another expensive activity that's about to empty my bank account because you know your boy was feeling like Sean White. I was Sean Black on them slopes. You know what I'm talking about?
I was like, he's gonna,
here's the pitch. Right, and it's good.
Yeah, you saw the setup. Do that?
No, of course I was gonna say that. It's actually really fun because I've been wanting to snowboard for so long, but even when I got back, I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna get, like, I don't have homies that like to snowboard. Like, and I'm already the homie who's always trying to do white shit anyway. So it's only gonna get worse, where it's like, okay, y'all, you know, I was trying to get y'all to golf, but how many of y'all trying to go up and see what's popping with these slopes? Like, how much? How
we'll go for veggie burgers afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. Hello, you still there?
Oh. Yep.
But today we're going to be talking about Pariah, the 2011 feature debut from director Dee Reese. Then we'll check in on that listener hotline. And of course, we got some staff picks for you. And you'll never guess what I'm going to pick. But first, it's time for Itadict, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Where we read a news segment and decide, is this important? Do I care? And there's been some interesting movie news this week for show. Okay. First up, we're talking about the Academy. They have announced plans to make the 2022 Oscars a little different. There will be three hosts, Regina Hall, Amy Schumer, and Wanda Sykes. It's the first time in a show's history there have been three female MCs. But the big plans don't stop there. The Oscars are dragging social media into the mix because we all know that's probably one of the greatest inventions. Until March 3rd, people can tweet their favorite movies of the year with the hashtag OscarsFanFavorite. The winner will be honored at the ceremony on March 27th, which, like, what can possibly go wrong? I can't wait till Movie McMovieface wins an Oscar. Is this important? Do you care?
Look, the social media thing is just feels so desperate. Like the Academy is like, look, we nominated Joker and you still didn't tune in, you know? And so I don't know why they are like still trying to chase this elusive audience that they once had and will probably never have again just because of the way the world has changed and tastes and you know, the role that films play in our life and all that other good stuff. So it just sort of smacks of pandering. Thrilled about the host, though. I think all three of those women are really funny. And, you know, Wanda Sykes is like probably tangentially connected to the film business, but, you know, so was Johnny Carson. And so I think between her and Amy Schumer, who has definitely one foot in comedy and one foot in movies, and then Regina Hall, who is a movie star, who is also good in a room, you know, I think there's going to be some really interesting energy there.
As you know, I thought they were, might go with multiple hosts. I did not think three women because apparently I'm closed-minded and don't no longer dare to dream. But yeah, I think it's fine. I totally agree with Alonzo. Like, the Academy is in a weird place. It's a fundraising event, right? Like, they make so much money on the Oscars, and that's their main thing. And then the movies that are nominated make more money. It's a marketing fundraising event where people get dressed up. And the reality is, the main audience driver for it's always just been to look at celebrities, but they can see celebrities all the time on the internet. Like, it's, you know, you can watch photo, your friend will text you the pictures as they come of like what people wore. You don't have to chime into anything. So yeah, I agree. I don't think the audience is ever going to come back, but if they want to think of ways to make it sort of even beyond relevant, just interesting and thoughtful along the way, go for it. And I am excited to see what these ladies do with this platform and how they shape it, and hopefully they have some fun with it.
Apparently they were gonna, they the first ones they went to were the cast of Only Murders in the Building, and because of scheduling that didn't work out, so we almost had Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. But
that, I would not have hated that. That
no.
would have been fun, yeah.
But this one is definitely blacker, so I'm a fan. but also, you're right. Everything y'all said, I think, is right on the money. The Oscars come from a time where there was this looseness to celebrity. You know, like, even like to reference things that are coming out now, like when the Pam and Tommy Lee sex tape was out, I remember, you know, typing into the computer because I was like, oh my gosh, all this. Meanwhile, just last week, Nelly accidentally uploaded a video of him getting a head from somebody. Like, it's like,
oh, did he accidentally do that?
Well, here's my theory is that he was going to post it on Close Friends and he accidentally posted publicly, which makes it even weirder, because if I had a person whose close friends was just them doing sex stuff, I'd be like, all right, dude, relax.
Maybe but we're anyway, not that
you'd
close.
Be like, excuse me, that's my job.
We're not that close. Sorry, can you put Alonzo's book in front of that? but like, it's trying to like grab this audience. And I honestly, it's probably the best idea they had, even though I don't think it will work, is like, let's involve social media. But I'm like, but that's what's beating you already. Like you're trying to use the thing that's beat. It's like everyone has this access, and you, because it seems like such a weird conundrum to me, because it feels like movies, like being like artsy with movies, is at its highest. Like, everyone loves to try and be a like a artsy movie person, even though it always devolves to superheroes. But don't, let's not go down that tangent. But like, truly, we're in this fun renaissance where like you can have a movie like Titan come out and people are like buzzing about it online, where like you would have never, like people would have been like, she does what to a what? You know, like, but so it seems like this weird, I could see why they're scratching their heads, because they're like, the movies are just way more digested and talked about on these social media platforms, but nobody cares about how we rank them.
Well, you did have all these people who were like, I can't believe Spider-Man didn't get an Oscar nomination. What is your problem,
yeah,
Academy?
Yeah, I wanted to jump out of a window. like, it's so hard for me, because I do feel like a daywalker in that regard, as someone who like loves a superhero movie, but like also loves, you know, great hit films like Judy.
Bring and up so, Judy, like, yep.
Now, so now is where you scratch your Maximum Fill bingo card. I have mentioned Judy.
Yes.
I like the old like Don Draper gif that goes around, which is where he says, that's what the money's for. You know, which on the show was like, it's like, you never say thank you. Well, that's what the money's for. You didn't nominate Spider-Man for an Oscar. That's what the money's
it
for.
It made 50,000 kabillion dollars.
Yeah. It won.
Spider-Man is okay.
Exactly. It is the clear winner here. You don't need to like,
Anyway.
Moving on. So this is not an Oscar nominee now or maybe ever. An actor was sentenced to 20 years in prison for a Ponzi scheme where he pretended to be making movie deals. 35-year-old Zachary Horowitz was pulling off the biggest Ponzi scheme in Hollywood history for nearly 7 years, tricking investors into giving him more than $650 million in total. He claimed he was investing in films being made at Netflix and HBO. Spoiler, he wasn't. Horowitz used money from new backers to partially pay back past investors, and that's what a Ponzi scheme is. Among other things, he used that money to buy himself a $5.7 million house with a screening room and a wine cellar. Is this important? Do you care?
Here's why this is important to me. It is important to me because I do not have the names, addresses, and full contact information for these dumb investors. I do not know this man here, but $650 million is so much money. If you knew how hard it was to raise money for independent film, I'm sure Olivia could back me up on this as well. Like,
yeah, to get $650,000.
To pull together $600,000 for an indie is like, all of this. The return of investment's already so difficult with indie film. And that's just like through the course of making something good and getting it out there, having this ass hat in there, pulling wool over the eyes of dum-dums. It's like, I don't know how that helps, my guy. Like, the rest of us who are trying to raise money, and now you're just like, in addition to it already being a tricky investment opportunity, it's like, oh.
Why isn't he more successful than actor if he's this good at, like, fleecing people?
Well, my question is, like, imagine if the list of these investors came out and you are a BIPOC queer, you know, filmmaker who got passed on by these guys, and you're like, oh, so you didn't want to make
my
mine
project because, seems shifty, because, but
because the white man came in here and made promises.
Look, you go to a house with a wine cellar, and you're more inclined to take it seriously,
right? Know? Oh, he must be successful. He has his own screening room.
Wow,
it's wild too, because I actually mixed this up with like three other scams that have been going on. Like,
who can keep track?
Yeah, I gotta get better at scamming is what's up.
That's the era we're in right now. I feel like it's like the dawn of the scammer right now.
Yeah,
it truly is. Okay, well, enjoy your time in prison, Zachary. You guys, in other movie news, the classic Drea Clark transition, the director of the upcoming Netflix biopic about Marilyn Monroe, has announced that his movie will be rated NC-17. Ha-cha-cha. That's not technically part of that headline. The movie, titled Blonde, and it's based on the book by Joyce Carol Oates, stars an appropriately blonde Ana de Armas as Monroe. Director Andrew Dominic hopes the movie will premiere at Cannes. He hopes that because it was invited to Cannes in 2021, but then it wasn't allowed to play because Netflix declined to screen any of their films theatrically, which is a requirement for the Cannes Film Festival. So we shall see. Of the rating and the movie, Dominic told Screen Daily, if the audience, he's Australian, but I'm not going to do that. If the audience doesn't like it, that's the fucking audience's problem. It's not running for public office. Ooh, I wish I knew that quote was going to get saucy. I would have maybe tried the Australian accent.
Yeah, yeah, I was yeah, hoping for it.
My bad. Crikey! Is this important? Do you care?
I gotta say, it's always such a good sign when a director starts clapping at the audience before anyone even sees it. Like, it's always when I ain't even got to lay my eyes on it and you already cussing me out. I know.
He's fascinating because he directed one of my favorite Westerns, which is The Assassination of
Jesse James by the Coward
Robert
Ford.
By the Coward. Yep. Thank you. Yeah. Great movie. Long ass title. And which is also an adaptation. And so I actually do have high hopes for this. And I really like the casting of Ana de Armas.
I've
spoken before. She actually, if you look at her, you're like, yeah, you look like Norma Jean. Thus, this could work. Get some big old Hollywood chompers on her and make
it
happen.
Do we know what it's NC-17 for? Like, I've heard some people say that it's just for language, right?
No, my friend. I've read Blonde. Blonde is a banger. And by that, I mean sex all over the place. It's Marilyn Monroe having sex from her teenage years to her decline. If the stuff from the book got in. There are several things in there that even if you would be like, oh my, you'd go full Minnesotan.
No. Yeah.
So my guess is it's sexual content.
I'm in love with Ana de Armas. I was so happy when she left Ben Affleck, and I was trying to find out where that his trash can was so I could take the full size cutout, make it my own. So I was already locked in. And you know, I don't really know much about the director, but you know, if Dre is excited, then I'm excited. That's pretty much how I view my movies, is how much Alonzo and Drea likes them, or I come in expecting to. But you know, yeah, it is interesting because now I have this bug in my head. But you know, luckily the source material, because you know, somebody was on Twitter talking about how only out of all the Marilyn Monroe movies that have come out, only two were directed by women, and those were made for TV. Mm. But at least this source material comes from a woman, and I just, you know, it's
Joyce Carol Oates. So there's a lot there beyond.
Okay.
There's lots to unpack. Yes,
a fascinating subject. Yeah,
yeah.
My question is, you know, I'm old enough to remember when, you know, well, I remember when they established the NC-17 rating, and the idea was it's not going to have the same sort of like cultural backlash as X, that it will be for, you know, for art films basically that go beyond R, but that it won't be tarred with the same brush as an X rating. And that didn't really last. And Showgirls kind of killed the idea of like the big studio NC-17 movie. But part of what killed NC-17 in the 90s was that Blockbuster wouldn't carry NC-17 films, and you would have to submit like an R-rated cut on VHS to get into Blockbuster. And I'm wondering, now that streaming companies are having so much of a footprint and taking up so much of the oxygen in the show business, are they going to make NC-17 impossible? Because I remember like when Showtime was doing Queer as Folk, they had to be they couldn't be quite as explicit as the UK version because everything on Showtime had to be considered an R-rated, you know, show or movie or whatever. But, you know, people got kids and people got Netflix. And so are they,
is
Netflix,
a Netflix release.
That's like what I'm saying. Yeah. Is Netflix going to be skittish about having an NC-17? Would Hulu, would, you know, and Paramount Plus, whoever. And so I'm just wondering if streamers are going to be the new Blockbuster in terms of providing a certain level of de facto censorship because they're going to give you a hard time about your NC-17 rating. I think that given the accessibility of streaming, and yes, obviously there's parental locks or whatever, but you know, I could see where they, you know, I hope they're going to allow this kind of thing to happen so that filmmakers who feel they need to go in this direction for whatever their vision is feel like they have the freedom to do so.
Ooh.
And that they also don't care what the fucking audience thinks.
Also that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, truly, yeah, if we move into this era where NC-17 can just exist because streamers aren't going to care, that's going to shake up things. We're going to see some fun stuff, I imagine, because I remember that was the big scare, right? Is if you got the NC-17, well, then you don't have a viable movie. So
yeah, because newspapers wouldn't carry ads, some theater chains wouldn't show them. It became this whole thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, France is about to go dummy right now. Is what's about to happen. We're gonna take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about Pariah.
The beginning of a new year is a great time to finally start things, workout routines, learning a new language, or thinking about your financial future.
You can start investing in no time with Wealthfront's classic portfolio, or make it your own with things that you care about, like socially responsible funds, technology, or hundreds of other investments. Wealthfront was designed by financial experts to help you turn your good ideas into great investments without the hassle of doing everything yourself. Wealthfront is trusted with over $28 billion in assets, helping nearly 500,000 people build their wealth.
To start building your wealth and get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, go to wealthfront.com/maxfilm. That is WEALTHFRONT. .com/maxfilm to start building your wealth. Once again, go to wealthfront.com/maxfilm to get started today.
All right, everybody, you've probably heard about microdosing. If you search around a bit on the internet, you will find all sorts of people are into microdosing to feel healthier and perform better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Performing better is the key word right now. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. So it's, you know, not for trying to, like, link up, you know, the dark side of the moon with Wizard of Oz. You're more so trying to just go through your day, do some work, maybe get some cleaning done, and just feeling a good, smooth ride the whole time you're doing it. I love it, and you will too. Maybe.
Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdosegummies.com and use code MAXFILM to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show notes, but again, that's microdosegummies.com and code MAXFILM, M-A-X-F-I-L-M.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Olivia Peace,
Alonso Duraldi.
And this week, we went back to 2011 to watch the award-winning feature debut from director Dee Reese, Pariah. Alonso, can you tell us, in short, what Pariah is about?
Certainly. It is about a teenage girl named Alike. She is a lesbian, but has a very religious mother, Audrey. And so is, you know, kind of living two lives and trying to, you know, figure out her personal life and her love life, and also how to, you know, stay on the good side of her mom. There's other issues happening at home. Her parents are clearly in a marriage that is falling apart. And, you know, secrets do not stay secret and things come to a head. And this is an extraordinary debut feature from Dee Reese with some really great performances, particularly from the great, great Adepero Oduye and Kim Wayans, who should have gotten like all the awards and truly all the dramatic gigs after this movie, because she is extraordinary as the mother who is monstrous, but never a monster.
Ooh, I like that. That is a way to kick things off. So, Olivia, you know, you're a filmmaker yourself. You've watched this movie through a different lens, and you have a dope film yourself. And I just kind of want to give you a space to talk about that and the movie and how, you know, that all makes a sweet, delicious pot of podcast stew.
I love it. I mean, what can I say? Like, Dee Reese is like the prototype, you know?
Because your film is also about like girls loving girls in high school, and then but also having a like counterculture element to it. It's a different setup, but there's some interesting similarities.
Yeah, yeah. So my film is called Tahara. It premiered at Slamdance in 2020. And it is so interesting because when I went to make the pitch deck to get crew and cast for Tahara, I used some images from Pariah because at the time I remember just like really trying to find other movies that had lesbians in them, that had even a girl who might, I could find a picture where she kind of looked like she liked another girl, you know? And I found Pariah, I found Watermelon Woman a couple of years before that. And yeah, they've both been like really close to my heart ever since. But my film features these two teenage girls who are actually at a funeral where one of them convinces the other one to kind of experiment in the bathroom with like maybe kissing her to practice, quote unquote, and things ensue. Calamity ensues. And I think what is so cool about Pariah is I remember when it came out in 2011, I was a junior in high school and I watched this movie. I thought it was so sad. Like, I remember watching this movie and like internally just feeling misery, like literally like tears in my eyes, the whole thing. I watched this movie recently and I thought it was hilarious.
Right. No, I can see that.
There are such incredible comedic moments in this that are kind of layered into the drama. I think Dee's a genius. I think some of these performances are incredible as well.
I love this. I was glad Alonzo brought this up. And this is also the gold standard of like as a film programmer at festivals. This is the kind of discovery you're looking for because you're getting not just Dee Reese, you're getting talent from newcomers, Like on screen, the actors that he mentioned, but then also like someone like Kim Wayans doing something you've never seen before. But then you're getting like a cinematographer like Bradford Young. Mm-hmm. You're getting exactly. so much new talent and perspective and a voice, and rewatching it this many years later, knowing where Dee's career has gone. We've talked about Mudbound. And then certainly I'm sure people have seen TV work that she's done. Like, she's really been building an impressive career, and seeing someone's debut and how they're like, because it's such an uphill slog to get a movie made at this level, and how personal this story is, and how you are constantly like, you know, our main character, we are in her pocket from the second it starts, and there's so many great details and flourishes that give you like, oh, this is a whole world that's been thought out. Like when you see her and we meet her at a strip club, she's got a do-rag and she's got her hat on low and like all of this, all these accoutrements. And then on the bus ride home, when you see her changing and just like, oh, she takes off the big baggy shirt and oh, she puts on these cute little, the world and character building in silent moments like that are really rare for untested directors.
Yeah, if you wanted to explain code switching without using words, like you would just show them that segment on the bus and the way that she completely transforms her look and, you know, just utterly like, you know, undoes this and puts on that. And it's like, oh, okay. So, it is absolutely this, like the way that she goes from being out in the club and the what she's presenting there to what she feels like she has to be at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool movie in that it's a coming of age story, right? Mm. But we're following a character who absolutely does know who she is. Like, she's consistent throughout the film. And the film is more about like other people getting in her way, literally, time and time again, as she's trying to show them who she is until she eventually just leaves.
That's such a good point, because we've definitely discussed, there's this whole history of especially like queer coming out movies that pivot just around the trials and tribulations of that and the heartbreak of that. And this movie is packed with trials and tribulations and heartbreak. But you're right. It's, we meet her as a young lesbian. Do you know what I mean? Like, we meet her. She knows who she is. She knows the life she wants to live. And also the pushback that she gets from her family is unexpected. Like, the different reactions between her mom and her dad, it's nuanced.
And there's also, I think there's that universality of the, you know, at the beginning of the film, you know, it is established that she's a virgin. She hasn't slept with anybody. Somebody flirts with her. She responds, you know, like really opens herself up, makes herself vulnerable, has that dashed away. And all of that is responded to, every phase of that, to, you know, to the heartbreak is so at the surface, in the way that when you're a teenager, like all of your feelings are just like busting to get out. And Oduye is so great at taking us into that and letting us see how vulnerable she is and how like shattered she is. And yet how she continues moving forward, you know? So yeah, we very much know who she is and it's established, and she is self-possessed, but at the same time, she is a teenage girl, you know, and
which is
all
ironic because she was 33 years of age when they shot this.
Wow. No,
which
way.
Blows my mind. No, truly, I was like, skincare regimen, please send it to me right now.
Man,
you know why I know that? Because I had this immediate, because normally we watch movies like this when they first came out, and we're like, these young women better get roles, we better see them in things. And so I was like, what have I? No part of me remembered that she was the one who plays the sister / potential love interest in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Oh, please. Like, I called that the Adepero Oduye show when we were recapping it on Breakfast All Day.
That's hilarious. I didn't recognize her at all. I was like, oh, wait, what? I know her? And then the woman who plays her best friend.
Pernell Walker.
And they're also very intentionally very butch. It's part of their thing. Like at the strip club, they're looking for AGs. Yeah. And it's really interesting too, that watching the arc of their role, because that could be such a limiting thing. The girl who plays, I say girl, but again, she might be 20 something when she shot it, but she plays a teenager. Like the young woman also was like this amazingly like New York trained theater actress or something. I was like, what? No, you guys were just some cute butch lesbians. They found her good actors. What? You're blowing my mind.
Yeah. I was kind of blown away because I've kind of been watching like some of the early aughts movies and the indie films of that time. And this movie looks so crisp and good. And I remember it was getting hailed for its cinematography. And I was like, you know, a lot of people were, you know, talking about Insecure in their way of lighting and shooting black people. I'm like, y'all was sleeping because this predates that. And it does that. So I wouldn't be surprised if the folks behind that saw this and was inspired, because I was really taken aback. I truly enjoyed it. But as a Nigerian with, you know, religious parents, I definitely it's so funny how like you can watch these things and kind of relate and just kind of like feel away. I knew it felt real the moment her sister kind of snitched on her for being out late. And I was like, oh, I would have went in the room and beat her ass. Like, you going to snitch on me? I'm all right. You going to get your ass beat real quick. If I'm getting in trouble, you getting hurt. You know, that's just that sibling stuff. And yeah, all the characters felt so real and grounded. And I think, you know, the strength of the line, like, I'm not running, I'm choosing, is like, I was like, dang.
You can always come back home. Things are going to be different, I promise you.
I'm not running. I'm choosing.
You know, I feel like so many people feel locked in their situation because the idea of like they don't want to seem like they're running. So like I just do hope that, you know, folks find this, watch this, and feel like it's not running in a lot of situations you're choosing. Mm-hmm. So all about
that. I mean, it's a movie that's like full of such amazing specificity. Yeah, you're totally right about that. Like, even down to the scene where like her friend Laura goes and gets her the strap and she tries it on. And it's like, it's a white, oh God, it's like a white dildo instead of like the darker skin one. Like,
they didn't have brown?
I didn't have time for all of that. And plus the brown ones were too big for you anyway.
It's not funny.
Dear, you gotta take it back.
I can't take it back.
No, here's the receipt.
Yo, I'm not going back in there. One time was embarrassing enough.
You grown?
So what? What if somebody see me in there? No, I'm not going back.
Like that moment where you're like, oh yeah, these are teenagers, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the specific, that's a great word for it, because there's small things like Kim Wayans' character, who plays her mother, who is conservative and Christian, but not in ways that we've seen hammered in movies that feel, or, you know, it didn't feel like, oh, this is just a caricature or something. But you also got, you know, from this title, Pariah, the sense is that it's these young women who are pariahs. And there's like, there's this corner store where they're like talking crap about the new lesbian bar and all the girls who are going there or whatever. But then when you see the mother at work, you're like, oh, you're a pariah, ma'am. Like, no one wants to sit by her or be by her. And the specificity, the smallness of why that is, and of like the judgment that she puts out on everyone around her all the time in ways that like sting people and keep them at a distance. That is, I mean, the minuteness of that.
Oh yeah, I came across a Judy Blum quote today, of all people,
that
I thought was
Judy.
Really great.
If he's big on Judy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
But no, the quote is, fear is often disguised as moral outrage. And watching this performance again, I was like, this is a woman who is terrified. Who is terrified of her marriage falling apart, who's terrified of her daughter not being the sort of traditional conforming daughter she wants. And so often when people demand conformity and demand like sort of religious fealty, it's because they are terrified of the world, you know, and that's what this character really is. And I think that's what keeps her from being this sort of two-dimensional, like knuckle cracking, you know, religious bigot or whatever, is that she is, you know, she can't cope with the world as it is. And so heaven help anybody around her who is not like following the rules that she's been following her entire life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're totally right about that. And it kind of shows through, like, there are these amazing scenes with Kim Wayans where at some point they're like, I think they're at a dinner table eating dinner, and the youngest daughter is talking about going to the dance.
Who are you gonna go with?
I don't know. Maybe Derek, if he asked me, or maybe Parrish. But I know for homecoming that I definitely want to go with Craig.
Mm. And who are you gonna go with, Lee?
I'm not going.
What do you mean you're not going? It's your junior year.
Leave her alone, Audrey. If she doesn't want to go, she doesn't have to go.
But she's a junior. She's not going to have any memories.
And suddenly it's like, oh, wait a minute. Who is this for? Is it for Mom?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is she feeling like all her time is like past and now she's with this man who doesn't love her? Like,
yeah.
You start seeing like a spiral, the way she feels trapped.
Well, that is.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was saying that. Well, that's the specificity and realness. Like, so many times in real life, you'll see how parents can project their relationship problems onto their children or hyper focus on their children so they don't have to focus on their own problems. So, that's once again just one of those pieces that feel. Just so real. Sorry, what were you going
to
say, Dre?
I was going to bring up that I meant to text Iffy while I was rewatching this because so Iffy, as people should know, is a writer on Grand Crew. Mm-hmm. And I almost texted him a few weeks ago because they cast an extraordinarily attractive older man as someone's father. And I was just going to send a bunch of screenshots and be like, cha, cha, cha.
Yeah.
And that actor is Charles Parnell, who was the father in Pariah. So
that's
you are lucky I did not follow up with that because ha cha cha. But he again, there talk about a fascinating built out character. He's not just the patriarch of this conservative family. He's a cop. And so you're getting so many cues from this man that you expect what his relationship with his daughter, his closeted at home daughter is going to be. And it upends that. And it feels much more messy and realistic as a result, because like she's a daddy's girl and you see them enjoying time together and playing basketball and him feeling defensive of her, not in an embarrassed way, but it's so nicely complicated. And if you were going to describe like just the outlines of this movie, it's nice because it deviates numerous times from what like the easiest story trajectory could have been.
I even like the little detail of how the father always refers to her as Alike and the mother always calls her Lee.
Yeah.
Like even having these sort of non-WASP names is too much for the mom to handle. It's too outside. It's too like against the grain for her brand of conformity.
Interesting. There's also a really sweet, if short, love story in the middle of this. Like there's a very small burgeoning connection that she has with this other girl that has. So there are moments of levity. I know so many people are thrown by movies that they're like, oh, is this just going to be heavy drama and heavy? I think that one of the gifts of Pariah is it's giving you so many shades. And there's these really sweet moments that come out. Like every teenage romance, it's a bummer. but even that, even the shape of what she goes through with that is a little unexpected, like from what the other girl is feeling, from how all of it, but it's also completely relatable of, oh, my world is so much better now that I have someone to crush on. Like,
yeah, and I think that's almost what makes it funny watching it now for me, like as this, I guess, adult person versus as a teenager where I was like, oh my God, the worst possible thing,
you're
rejection.
You're wrapped up in your own dramas. Yeah.
You know? You know, because you know, kind of from the beginning, like you're hearing girls saying, like there was one girl at school who was like, oh, like I like girls, but I love boys. So already it's kind of in your mind like, oh, I think this girl, this Bina girl is no good. Oh, and the way, okay, they finally kind of consummate their relationship, sweet moment. And then they wake up in the morning. Alike is trying to have a conversation, kind of like, oh, what are we? Like, maybe we'll keep it a secret. And Bina's like, girl, what are you talking about? Like, let me get my things. Like, oh, it's just so awkward.
It
incredible.
Is so teenage. Just painful.
Oh, yeah. Bina is what they would call on the Gilded Age an adventurer.
They call her something else in Reacher.
Yeah, sure. That's what they
Oh, well, you know, it comes down to that fun time where we're going to go ahead and rate the movie, which we rate with our three levels, screen it, which is the highest, stream it, which is mid, and skip it, which speaks for itself. You know, Olivia, as our guest, I'll let you kick it off, even though I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be.
Oh, it's Black History Month. You got to screen it. Like,
Oh, yes, indeed.
I am also a screen it. It's currently on HBO Max. So yes. You can pretend you're at a cinema. But yeah, I mean, for everything we discussed, for seeing just exciting first time filmmaker work and like where that can go. And then also, again, another shout to Bradford Young. Incredible cinematography, mm-hmm. and then was like Oscar nominated for Arrival within like 10 years or 6 years of this movie or something. So I think there's so much here to take on, and it's not an absolute like, oh, a coming out story that's just ends in heartbreak. And it's not, there's a sense of optimism to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm for sure a screen it. I have taught this film in an LGBT cinema course, and it played really well. I think it was actually the last film I showed in the semester. But yeah, it is. You're seeing a lot of great careers kind of being born or taking off, and you know, it just on a human level, it holds up really well, and it's just gorgeous to look at, and meaningful and emotional, but hopeful and not in any way a bummer. So yeah, by all means, screen it.
Yes. And of course, yes, like Olivia said, it's Black History Month. You got to screen it. It is on HBO Max. And if you got a nice 72 incher with surround sound, mm-hmm. you can get the cinema experience right at your home.
Or watch it on your 13 inch laptop. Like,
yeah, so you can get
Same thing. I mean, honestly, if you put a blanket over your head and put some, your headphones in, it's like having a 72 incher, 75. Yeah. Super fun. Truly enjoyed it. And yeah, Kim Wayans, that's the fun thing about watching movies like this and being at a point in my career where I'm writing so much stuff. Cause now I'm like, I got to get her on season two of Grand Crew. I got to write something for her because she is truly amazing. And you know, everyone talks about Marlon in Requiem for a Dream.
Right.
We need to be talking about Kim and Pariah.
Mm-hmm.
So check that out. We'll be right back after here for some other shows on Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
And we're the hosts of One Bad Mother, a podcast about parenting. Parenting is hard, and we have no advice, but we do see you doing it.
Honk if you like to do it. Didn't we have a bumper sticker a while back that was like, honk if you did it? That's what it was.
I think it was honk if you're doing it.
Why did we not ever make those?
We did make them. I think they're still in the Max Fun store.
Honk, honk, you're doing it.
Thanks, Biz. So are you.
Each week, we'll be here to remind you that you're doing a good job.
You can find us on MaximumFun.org. Honk, honk.
Toot, toot.
I listen to Bullseye because Jesse always has really good questions.
What did John Malkovich wear when he was 20?
I don't know how to describe it.
There's always that moment where Jesse asks a question that the person he's interviewing has not thought of before.
I don't think anyone's ever said that to me or acknowledged that to me, and that is so real.
Bullseye, interviews with creators you love and creators you need to know from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Olivia Peace,
Drea Clark.
And now we have a message from a listener for the hotline. It was a text message that was sent. Just so you know, you don't always have to call. If you don't want us to hear your voice, you can send an email, etc., etc. And if you do send it, then it's up to me to read it. As such, prepare yourself. Because this is it. Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets presents an incredible vision of a future based on the premise that new species were greeted with a gesture of peace and trust, rather than suspicion and violence. The opening montage is a well-made sequence which wordlessly shows why those who choose peace are anything but cowards.
Unfortunately, this world is depicted through the eyes of charmless characters who develop a romance based on the premise of a man harassing his directly disinterested colleague. Subordinate? I don't remember. Until she ultimately agrees to be with him because the movie is about to end. My question is, are there any movies you've seen with an interesting world or premise that you wish had been the backdrop for a better story?
So that obviously was a perfect voice. And if I ever got into scamming people, I would want Iffy to do that exact accent.
That was like a driving tour of the entire United Kingdom.
A little into the African continent.
Yeah, a little bit.
It was really getting it done.
The dorms at Oxford and Cambridge, maybe.
Yeah. I wanted to shout out that they started with, if you had just told me this question without any movies, I would have been like, oh, Valerian in the City of a Thousand Planets. In terms of what's a movie with an interesting world or premise you wish had been the backdrop for a better story. But please, if you haven't seen Valerian, if anything, just, I'm sure YouTube has it as a standalone, there is a scene where Rihanna plays a futuristic stripper where she changes entire costumes, like full body costume, but like mid twirl. Like her whole thing is she's a contortionist stripper shapeshifter. There, just please watch that. just watch her performance. It's a, yeah.
I sold it.
Thank you. She sells it better, but yes. Also, fun fact, Jeff Goldblum's contortionist wife plays the contortionist body double. So just enjoy it. Please, go watch it. Just go watch the clip.
Yeah, no, I mean, Valerian is, I think, certainly a classic example of, like, there's a lot of ideas here. I wish they added up to something. Weirdly enough, the movie that always leaps to mind for me that they kind of course corrected was The Purge. Because the very first Purge drops this whole like world building. Oh, it's a different government and it's run by this like weird, you know, theocracy in America now. And there's this one night a year where everybody gets to go kill each other. And like, oh, OK, well, that's an interesting premise. And then the whole thing is set inside one house. I'm like, well, don't throw all that at me and then just like give me Ethan Hawke's house. Like there's more. I want to see what the rest of the world is like. This sounds really interesting. And then in the subsequent movies, they go there and like, OK, yes, this is how, you know, if you're going to give me all this premise, like also deliver on what the world you have built, like, even not just do your Blumhouse one location cheapy. But, you know, like I said, they fixed it.
That one's tricky, and I'm glad they got better because The Purge's whole thing was, like, how do we do a high-concept thing with our low-budget one-house movie?
Right.
And so I'm glad they got the budget.
But they
later,
did it too, you know, well.
Let them on the streets, yeah. You know what immediately came to mind, and it's very easy, I think, for sci-fi to end up in this, like, interesting world that's Do you remember a motion picture called In Time, starring Mr. Justin Timberlake?
Yes. Where time is literally money.
Yeah, time is. So the setup of it is no one ages past like 25 anymore. Maybe 21. No, 25.
27, I think it was.
27. Really. Yeah, you know, that's when all the rock stars die. So no one ages past this young age. So you're all beautiful forever, except for how long you're going to live is determined by like a clock in your arm, and you can buy and add more time to it. Or no, you pay for things with time. Whatever it matters, it's this whole interesting thing with time and youth and money. And the idea of if you have money, you can live forever. And what does a world look like? We already live in a disgusting nightmare world, right? I mean, God bless it. It's wonderful. I'm super thrilled to be here. But, you know, garbage people everywhere. And so there's so much rich there of, oh, what if you know, the morality of someone who has lived for centuries and can continue to do so because they invested well, you know, 100 years ago, whatever it is. There's so much rich there. And then instead, it's like Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried, who plays like his daughter wife. I mostly just remember, A, being upset with what I felt like was a real ball drop of a cool story. And she had on stupid high heels. It was one of those when, don't make this woman run or take off your damn shoes, lady. Like, I just, my big takeaway from that was there is more comfortable footwear out there for you should you wish to find it.
See also Jurassic World.
Yes. I mean, this might be like a lukewarm take because I think everyone feels similarly, but Space Jam? I
cannot yes, no,
that's probably the best one. You're right.
I can't recall what the plot of the movie was at all. I remember poor Michael Jordan's acting. But I'm a sucker for like an animation live action hybrid. And I remember being so excited as a kid. I think I liked it. Tried to go back to it. Couldn't even get through it.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I feel, Alondo, I can barely remember. Did we have to watch the original Space Jam I have last year?
I'm looking over at my shelf at the red velvet tufted Ifejikude collection.
Oh, that's right. And it's one of Ify's favorite movies that he made us watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad that a professional filmmaker has joined us to tell us that movie is indeed a turd pile.
Oh, see, man. It's got good memories. However, yeah,
when you're eight, you have no filter.
Look, you know, when I rewatched it, I saw no problems. So I don't know. Maybe it could be y'all. It could be. So
I was excited for Space Jam 2. I really was.
No, oh, did, don't worry, Olivia. Did we also have
we
to watch that?
We did that one, too.
Alonzo and I did. Did Ify somehow miss it? He did.
Yes, he did.
Ouch.
But that actually is a great point. The second one even more unlocks the idea of a movie where you get full access to the Warner Brothers vault and all of those characters and can integrate all those things in. Like, that maybe should have been all of our first answer to this question.
No, true, because I've always loved the Looney Tunes, so Space Jam is already a letdown enough by not sort of making the most out of those immortal characters. But then Space Jam 2 just utterly shits the bed with every Warner Brothers character who ever existed, and they still have nothing to do but like, oh, what if they all watched a basketball game for an hour?
Whole time I was watching Clockwork Orange, I'm like, what the Droogs gonna be doing when the basketball game going down? What are they gonna be up to? I gotta see that.
So true. Most people had that reaction to Clockwork Orange. Yeah.
Great question, though.
That was a very good question.
That was a fantastic question.
And sadly, there's no name to it. The name got lost. So if you are the mysterious person that lives everywhere in the UK at once, who sent that in, thank you. Let us know.
Thank you to that listener for sending in that question. If you have something you want to put on the hotline, record a voice memo and send it to MaximumFilm@MaximumFun.org. All right. Now it's time for the staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Alonzo, why don't you start?
Well, I was, sort of looking around at, the great Bradford Young's career, and the year after he made Pariah, he worked with another essential up-and-coming filmmaker, a lady named Ava DuVernay, maybe you've heard of her, on her early film Middle of Nowhere, which is about a woman who is trying to juggle medical school and the fact that her husband is incarcerated and the interest of another guy who might, be the right person for her. It's a terrific cast, as in, we were talking about Pariah, this mix of up-and-comers and established presences. So, you've got Emiyasi Coronialdi, you've got David Oyelowo, who would go on, obviously, to reteam with Ava DuVernay on Selma, Omari Hardwick, Edwina Findlay, and the great Lorraine Toussaint. So it is another beautifully shot film, another really talented filmmaker, making their presence known. And it's on Netflix. So if you've never seen any of the pre-Selma Ava DuVernay stuff, this is a great place to start. Middle of Nowhere.
Middle of Nowhere played both Sundance and LA Film Festival. Got to do the rounds with that one. And Bradford shot Selma as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Good stuff. Good call, Alonzo. Mine is, and I've absolutely done this before, but basically if Steven Soderbergh is going to like release something on HBO Max with little fanfare, I apparently am going to watch it and love it. And the one he did last week is a film called Kimmy, which stars Zoe Kravitz, which is a sort of, it's like, someone had a that I can't credit, but I do in my heart, was like, oh, it's like Rear Window meets North by Northwest. It's this sort of future is now Hitchcockian thing where...
And The Conversation.
And The Conversation, right, where she plays an agoraphobic who's witnessed a murder and needs to get out there. But it has really interesting sort of low-key commentary about our COVID days and just the experience of being shut off from the world and how we see things now without being, oh, this is a COVID film. I mean, I love him. I'm kind of a sucker that way. But I really love Zoe Kravitz and thinks that she has so much to her and really like when people use her in interesting ways and let her kind of unleash her own talent. So yes, Kimmy, HBO Max.
Ooh, you have a pick, Olivia?
Yes, thinking like what would pair well with Pariah. And I think I already kind of like mentioned Watermelon Woman, but if anyone out there has not seen it, Watermelon Woman by Cheryl Dunier is an incredible film. It's also about a Black lesbian. This time she's working in a video store. And while she's working this video store, she's kind of like also trying to be a filmmaker, and she's trying to make a film about this other Black woman that she sees playing like mammy type roles in these really, really old 1930s films. But it's super funny. It was super controversial when it came out. And yeah, it laid the groundwork for films like Pariah and like my film today.
Nice. The very first American feature film directed by a Black lesbian, definitely a key part of the new queer cinema. And is it available on Canopy? It's available on Canopy.
Ooh.
Oh, Alonzo, we got to get you a commission for those.
Canopy rocks.
They're the best.
Well, keeping in line with the fun, queer action, nice kind of musical, wild romp by none other than John Cameron Mitchell, I have the pleasure of saying that my staff pick this week is going to be Short Bus. Andrea's mouth is agape. Go ahead and check that out. The first 15 minutes will knock your socks off. Truly a
wild... Speaking of NC-17.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled that you just did a staff pick of Short Bus.
Yeah, yeah. I saw it for the first time. It was definitely my jam. And, you know, if I've let the shock... wash through you, then actually go back and watch it, because I do think that he does some amazing things with some of the edgy things he has in that film. I mean, even just, I watched the opening scene, which I'm not going to make you go into blind, three times. One for myself, second time to show Molly, to which she reeled back. And then the third time, just kind of watching it. And I guess I'll mention it was for former producer Casey's Fart House Pod. And so and they're having an erotica month, and they're like, well, we got to have you before this ends. And but like when you watching it the third time, you really see the storytelling that is actually taking place in that. To me, it really kind of blew me away, because I can see how people can just be kind of prudish. And I was like, what is this? And it was like, no, it's like, yes, it's explicit, but it is not for naught. And I do like the way it just explores sexuality and polyamory, and it really kind of weaves these stories in such a fun way. Me and Casey dug it. His co-host did not like it. So it was me yelling at his co-host for not liking it the whole time. But yeah, I can't wait to see Hedwig and the Angry Inch after that. And I hope that there's just as much.
Wait, nudity. I'm sorry. You watched Short Bus first?
I was going to ask, and have you seen Hedwig yet?
Okay. You keep us on our toes.
Oh, man. And for those interested, if you're living somewhere where this is happening and going to theaters, Short Bus is currently having a reissue that was a 4K remaster done this year, and it is making its way around the country. So you might have a chance to even screen it.
But if you're in LA, apparently on Saturday, April 9th at the Alamo Draft House in downtown LA, they're showing Hedwig at 11:30 a.m. So I can't wait to drag
AM
Dre
or PM.
With you. A.M. Oh. 11:30 a.m.
I love midnight movies at noon. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Just a nice, just get a cup of coffee and Hedwig.
You rang?
Yeah. Oh, what a fun show. Thank you so much, Olivia, for joining us today.
Thanks,
is there anything
Olivia.
You'd like to plug before you get out of here?
How can people find you and your movie?
Good question. You can find me on Instagram. I'm at Olivia J. Peace. And we are on Instagram as a film. I think Tahara the film.
And you said you might be, it's possibly releasing this spring, right?
Yeah, we should be in theaters, COVID willing, at the end of the spring or early summer. So keep a lookout for that.
Yay, congrats.
Ooh,
yay.
Yes, and of course, as always, Alonzo, Drea, thank you for coming on. It's been a just a fun romp and jam having you here.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thanks for your romping and jamming.
Thank you. And this one's to the listeners. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm or send us an email, an electronic mail, at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org, including those voice memos for the hotline. Our producer is Marissa Flaxpart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. See you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.